And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show. Myself and Cheddar are here on Monday. And to be fair, this is all about Limerick today, Cheddar. An absolutely unbelievable win for them yesterday. And they're up out of Division 2. I read after 7 years, after 8 years, after 9 years. I think it's after 8 years. But I don't think Limerick cares. It was a bloody long time down there.
Yeah, great boost for Limerick. And, you know, bear in mind that Limerick were trying hard to get out of that division over the last couple of years. I'm not so sure there's a couple of other teams in it at the minute that have the same mindset. But, you know, a massive boost for them. And what's really, really important to them, they're a young team coming up. They're still in development as such. And, you know, playing in Division 1, you know, what does it give you? It gives you a much quicker game, much more competitive, much more physical. You're playing against the top teams. So, you know, you have a great chance to test yourself about the speed of your hurling and your system of play and all of that against really, really good teams. And, you know, obviously in the last couple of years, Division 1A has been hugely competitive. I suppose if there was a downside, if Limerick were to go up to Division 1A next year with the same conditions to have this year and you know, missing the Piercy players and that, you know, that could be a little bit of a drawback, because it is very, very competitive up there. You will need your full panel, particularly a young team. And you got, at the end of the day, you're using the league to settle your team, find your best team, and, you know, in advance of championship. And, you know, you need everybody on board for that. You could very well go up to Division 1A and just ship a couple of defeats and then just lose a little bit of confidence and, you know, slip back to where you are. So I think it depends on how Limerick approach it. Obviously, the championship this year is going to determine that as well. But it's a, you know, great boost for them. A great boost going into the championship, obviously, for them as well.
Yeah, luckily for them, the Piercy work on a policy of 1 year on, 1 year off. So they like to win Limerick, win Munster, then lose Limerick the following year, and then make a comeback the year after that. So listen, they'll have Alden, the Piercy lads next year. I'm making that prediction. But no, they were really good, and they were down by 8 points at half time. They showed a lot of bottle, and it could be a turning point for Limerick hurling. Like, we saw Galway last year. Galway, there was question marks about them all the time. They came back from an impossible position against Waterford, and their whole season turned on it. And, like, I mean, I don't think Galway, the position they're in now, will be too worried about the fact that they didn't get up. But I think Limerick needed to get up for their development and for their, like, psychologically, it had become baggage. You know, it had become you're not able to get out of it, rather than we're not too bothered that we don't get out of it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's the psychological part more than the physicality part. I think nobody would question Limerick's physicality about hurling. Sometimes, actually, it might be a little bit maybe over the top. And, you know, I've never seen a Limerick team bullied or anything like that. When you look back over the years and you look at the likes of the Leonard Enerights and the Pat Hartigans and some of those, you know, they were really, really strong physical players. I think it's more the psychology of it more than anything else. And the sort of, you know, even just looking at the, you know, the media stuff coming out of Limerick was, you know, a little bit of a millstone around her neck to be still sort of caught in Division 1B, whereas the likes of Galway were using it differently. They were saying, well, look, we can work out of this and still get ourselves into shape for an All-Ireland. So I think it is really, really important to Limerick. You know, I think you probably won't see the real benefits of that for 2 or 3 years' time. But it's mainly around that it's a very, very young team, very, very young panel. Generally speaking, at the start of your career, you're very ambitious. You want to play in that area, and you want to learn things. So, you know, how much they improve in Division 1 next year will mean a lot. But look, it could very well be we'll be talking to the All-Ireland champions by this time next year anyway. So they may not need Division 1A to improve themselves, because, look, they have a huge amount of raw talent.
They have, yeah.
They obviously have success with under-21s and that already. And, you know, I think it's a good thing that your club is doing well in Munster and in All-Ireland series. And if you look back the last couple years with Napierish and Kilmallock and Patrick's Well, you know, they're never too far away when they get out of Limerick. And maybe that's one of the reasons why Napierish don't win back to back. The club scene in Limerick is very, very competitive, and there's a huge following for hurling there. And I'd say of all of the teams around Ireland, with the exception of Cork, I probably think that Limerick have the best following. They're really crazy about their team once they get going. And I certainly well remember 96 and some of the All-Irelands that they were in, and the volume of Limerick people that were actually landed in Dublin without a ticket was, I've never seen it. So it'd be great to see him coming. But just back to your point, I think it is important to their development, particularly because of the stage that they're at, and in terms of finding their best team and, you know, testing themselves against the top team in more matches.
Yeah, they needed a bit of luck along the way, which wouldn't always associate maybe with Limerick. Like Kyle Hayes' goal was a fluke. Isn't that fair to say that he completely mishit it and wrong-footed Skehel, who I'm sure goalkeepers in hurling, when they think someone's going one way, they have to go that little bit early or else they've no chance of getting a hurley on it. But he completely scuffed it and it kind of trickled in, and that set up the comeback was on at that stage, because they'd already chipped away at a few points. When that goal went in, geez, Limerick got their tails up, and like they looked a completely different team, and like they're a really, when you look through that Limerick team, it's a really, really good team. We're going to talk to Declan Hannan a little bit later in the show in part two, and he's at centre half back, big physical man. They've a good solid midfield. Their forwards are big men. And O'Garrod Hegarty went off early, which was a big loss to them because he was being targeted for puck out. Seamus Flanagan was outstanding at full forward. Kyle Hayes obviously came on, big physical man. Shane Dowland, David Dempsey have to come back into that team. All of a sudden, Limerick, Seamus Hickey wasn't playing at full back. We had Richie McCarthy playing, who still has his belly, which he usually does. He even has it for championship, never mind around this time of the year. He's definitely going to have it. He played really well. Tigerish cornerbacks, good half back line. And I'm looking through this Limerick team now and I'm thinking, this could actually be, like, you know, a contender with these fellas.
Yeah, they certainly are. I think we spoke about it last week, Ole, but you know, I urge a small little bit of caution. Limerick have been here before a number of times, yeah, even in the last couple of years. So I think, you know, how they manage the, you know, the current momentum that they've gathered will be really, really important. And I think that's where the likes of John Kiley will really come into his own. Very, very, very intelligent man, very intelligent approach to things. And you know, he'll know the impact of this and how to actually manage it. I think back to the Kyle score, I think his face told it all. But in fairness to Kyle, he is a superb hurler and it would be unusual for him to scuff a shot. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. I think you're right, it did scuff it a little bit in that sense, all right. But I think his face told that. Look, Limerick have incredible quality in their team. They're a real hurling county. And they really, really get behind their team, and they've got some really, really good stick men. And if you look at Kyle, I mean, Kyle was centre back and has played a lot of his hurling at centre back. So they've got a lot of big, flexible players that can actually play in a lot of positions. And I think what's really important to them about them at the minute is their panel strength for the championship. This championship is going to take its toll on panels, and you know, you won't get away with 16 or 17 inter-county standard players anymore. You're going to need 24 or 25. And to be honest with you, I always rate number 20 to 30 as being the really, really critical players on a panel, because they're the guys that are going to push the first 15 in training and all of that. Limerick have that at the minute, and I think they've a really, really great chance. The tricky one, though, is actually the quarter final. I mean, they're playing Clare, that they're going to play them again in the championship. And, you know, even if they get through that, there's a potential for all Munster semi-final after that as well. So, you know, I think Limerick have to stay going, have to keep pushing, have to keep winning. And they can't just go out to fulfil a fixture and not show their hand or anything like that. But it's just a little bit tricky that they're playing Clare in the actual quarter final.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, like, I mean, I suppose without the Napiershig lads, they won't show their full hands. So maybe they're in like, I mean, Clare, we pretty much know the strong team they're putting out in most games now. But it's interesting that we know that this Limerick team is backboned by the 2017-2015 All-Ireland winning teams. But I didn't realise they'd won a Munster in 2011, which Shane Dowling and Declan Hannan and all these fellas were on. So you've almost got three different teams that's backbone in these, and teams that have sampled success, because some of the lads from 2011 would have won the Munster Senior in 2013, and all of a sudden it just puts a new reflection on Limerick, that most of those lads that are on that team would have won All-Irelands or Munsters before at under 21 or senior level. And like, I mean, they'll be afraid of no one. They have Kinnerk involved. John Kiley's a good manager, and I don't know, I just, Limerick kind of maybe to turn the corner for themselves psychologically. They definitely turned the corner in my mind. Anyways, what was your take on the incidents, because it was highlighted on League Sunday last night, Toohey incident, and it was with was it Barry Murphy, and he put the hurley into his balls. I think Michael Dignan said testicles. Maybe that's a politically correct way of saying it. But he definitely put the hurley into his defence. His helmet was being interfered with at the time, and would he have known exactly what he was doing? You know, you'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt and say he was jabbing him. I don't know. Would lads go out to jab the other fella in the balls?
I think we've got to be really honest and really frank with it. I think he knew what he was doing.
Right.
Yes, he might, his helmet might have been interfered with before that, but there's a lot of things you could do without doing what was done.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, genuine hurling people, you know, will give the benefit of the doubt to, you know, rough play and, you know, maybe a bit of a wild slap or something like that.
But you give the benefit of the doubt to a lot of stuff hurling people do.
But I think in this instance, I think you've got to be clear what, you know, what it is and that as well. And look, just don't want to demonise Matuhi, you know, as has happened with a number of other players as well. But I think we've got to stand up and call it for what it is when these things happen. And look, rough play or something like that, you know, I think that's a very, very different thing.
Here's a bit of analysis last night that annoyed me on the league Sunday. And it was Deignan's analysis of Declan Hannan not marking Cathal Mannion. Right, so Cathal Mannion's playing centre forward on Declan Hannan. And Declan Hannan's holding back. In my understanding, tactically, of Galway is they want Declan Hannan to follow Mannion, and then they leave the middle wide open for David Burke, who's a machine for running down the middle and tapping over 3 or 4 points from play. So is Declan Hannan right for not following him there, or is he wrong? I would have said that that was someone else's job to pick up Cathal Mannion if he's drifting around, you know, the midfield and picking up, you know, ball in pockets of space. Or if Hannan goes after him, is that exactly what Galway want him to do, Cheddar?
That's exactly what they would want him to do. You know, obviously you need to have a plan beforehand. You know, you may send Declan Hannan after the centre forward because he may very well be the best man to mark him, but you simply cannot leave the centre open. You've got to drop a midfielder back into six if that's what you're going to do. But just, you know, being naive and sending a centre back out to a Roman centre forward, you know, you're going to give away goals if that's the case, because you're going to put the ball right down the throat to your full your full forward if that's the case. So look, there's a number of ways that you might actually counter tactic that, and you may very well ask your six to step up and I mean, Tip do it a lot with Noel McGrath. I mean, really what they're looking for is to drag you out of there to create space in the forward, but they're also looking at good strikers. You take Noel McGrath, you know, sprinting out looking for short 30 yard hurley passes off a half back. When he turns, the score is on, and obviously it was yesterday as well. You know, so how are you going to stop that? You know, look, most teams would leave their six, they'd actually bring their six back in front of the D, so he mops up the breaking ball around there, and they'd probably pull out the step back a corner forward and a wing forward back out to the middle to pick him up. But it's just the understanding. You need to practice those things and rehearse those things. They won't just happen. You can't just shout off the sideline to do this and that. It won't happen like that. You need to rehearse it in training. So it just comes naturally to players. And you need to have the right players to do that as well. You know, you need a corner forward and a wing forward, and to be very selfless, to give up their attacking instincts, I suppose, and to work back for the team. But really, all you need to do is you need to grind that out for about 10 or 15 minutes, because you have now put the pressure back on the other manager and he's going to have to change his tactics again. So sometimes you just grind out the match for 10 or 15 minutes and then just change, you know, you might just force the other manager to change his tactics, and then, you know, you're back in business again.
Yeah, so it's always an interesting dynamic, that centre forward, centre back thing. I don't think it's just as simple as saying he's 20 yards off him, when it looked to me Hannan was covering his full back line. So, you know, maybe if we saw the camera angle from behind the goals or something, it might have improved.
Well, I think it's interesting, Willie, because I think, you know, Clare were probably caught a little bit flat-footed by three around the middle yesterday with Water, where they seemed to bring their sweeper out the field a little bit. And I mean, look, that's a counter tactic to their centre forward. You just flood the middle with an extra player and he picks up that centre forward that's standing out in the middle. And, you know, you just need to do it for about 10 or 15 minutes, because if it's not working and it's a central part of your attacking plan, well, you're going to change it. So you've turned the tables really on the opposition manager by thinking your way out of this problem and forcing him then to change what he's actually done.
Yeah, no, exactly. Now that you mentioned the Waterford thing, there was good honesty we saw on League Sunday last night from Gerry O'Connor, and he did speak about the fact that Waterford brought their sweeper into midfield and we were a bit slow to react to that. And, you know, Gerry O'Connor is obviously very comfortable in his position as manager that he was able to admit something like that, because a lot of managers, you wouldn't have Davy Fitzgerald admitting that he made a mistake like that anyways, because everything Davy does is right, and if Wexford lose, it's because the players didn't listen to his direction. We know that's kind of the way Davy works. But I thought it was good to see Gerry admitting that. And again, like, listening often to League Sunday and RT, the sweeper's the big bad wolf, but you can see Waterford using the sweeper in an attacking sense and bamboozling Clare to the point where, right, whoever the sweeper was, I didn't see the game, maybe De Burke, he's back, he's lot. Next minute he drifts maybe to the wing at midfield. He won't be picked up because the other sweeper is obsessed with the full forward line. Suddenly De Burke can start knocking over long range scores from there, you know, and that's clearly what happened, and Gerry O'Connor's man enough to admit he didn't react to it.
Yeah, I suppose, look, they're the really interesting things in hurling, and I think I mentioned that last week, that, yeah, you know, I think the game is going to go much more tactical in the next couple of years. I was probably a little bit surprised by it, really, because, look, a lot of teams play three across the middle now anyway, conventionally play three across the middle. So, you know, I think Clare shouldn't have been surprised for what Waterford did. And you've got to bear in mind as well that Clare themselves often use that tactic. So, in training, I would have assumed that they would have counter tactics for that. But I can say myself from a small bit of experience on the sideline that you may see it, but it might be very, very difficult to actually counter it and that. And as I said earlier on, if you haven't rehearsed these things, it's very difficult just to give instructions out on the sideline and move people around the place and then expect your team to click. It doesn't work like that. You've got to sort of second guess it.
If you're surprised on the day like that, Cheddar, with a tactic like that you haven't seen coming, how many times when do you react to that? Because obviously there's pressure on the sideline and you're watching everything, and I've done sideline reporting for News Talk, and the sideline's nearly the worst place to try and see everything down there. I would prefer to sit in the stand. It's a much, much better view of being able to see everything. But say we're using De Burke as the example and he comes up into midfield, how many times will you want to see him up there before you're going to counter? You know what I mean? Because it can happen just once without it being necessarily a change.
It would have to happen a couple of times, really, I suppose. Other than that, it, as you say, it just might have, you know, happened off the cuff as such, and a player comes into midfield. I suppose, look, it's very, very difficult to get it right, is the first thing I would say about it. And it's very, very difficult to have everything covered because, you know, you've got intelligent management teams now trying to pick holes in your system and trying to gain an edge on you. But I think if it's not working for them or they're not hurting you, you're probably willing to go with it for a little while and just see how it pans out, particularly if your team are doing okay themselves. But if it's hurting you, in other words, they're finding loose players and they're pinging pines from distance and that, well, you've got to react immediately to it because, look, they're just going to get a run on you at that stage. And in hurling, it's very, very easy to nail over 5 or 6 pints and, you know, now you're out of sight as such. You just can't wait too long on it. But equally, you can't just react to everything. Otherwise, in that, your own team's all over the field.
Yeah, you're all over the place. Like, because some managers, I'm sure, do panic. Like, my father was a selector for a lot of years and he'd be telling me stories of certain fellas are mad to make changes after 5 minutes and other fellas are calm, and it's having that dynamic between management teams that they can, like, obviously you need a good kind of chemistry on the field and for your team, but management teams need a good chemistry as well, that one fella who might be a panicker needs to maybe be offset by someone else who might be a little bit more relaxed and calm.
Yeah, I think what's really important, there's a couple of really, really important things, and these things, you'll always see these in successful teams. First of all, you need leadership on the field. You need intelligent players on the field to be able to figure out things. You're not going to be able to do everything on the sideline yourself. But more important than that is, what's the process in place between management and teams? What's the communications? How do teams communicate to you? Because, look, things could be happening in the field as a manager you may not see. And, I take your point that it's not easy to see everything off the sideline, or maybe you're better off up in the stand. Look, there's probably some people would agree with that. But, like, all managers will have somebody in the stand anyway, looking at a viewpoint from there. But I think it's really down to leadership on the field, intelligent players, preferably in central positions, figuring out what's going wrong and figuring out a solution to it. But more than anything else, coming across to the sideline, look, here's what's happening in front of me, here's what we might do. And I think management working with the players in that type of situation is the only way that you're going to actually work this out.
Yeah, and I think communication with players, you have some managers that have maybe a dictator system and it's my way. I think the good managers talk to players because, and I've said this on the football show before, no one's better at analysing what goes on in their part of the field than the actual player that's in that part of the field. If you're a wing back, you know where the breaks are going in midfield, you know where the space is around your wing and across, you know, when you're looking up. I'm sure feedback from players about what do you think's going on, that's important in the modern manager. I know for a fact Jim Gavin does it an awful lot in the football, even though not much comes out of that camp, but I know that he's very open for player feedback.
I think it's critical. I think it's absolutely critical to a successful team. I think the days of an autocratic manager are well over. I think they should be. I think there needs to be actual, and I hate cliched words, and there's a word called process being thrown around a lot at the minute, but it really is a process. You know, how is this communicated? Even at half time, do the players come in? Do you give a special time to the players, to the backs, and separately to the forwards, to be able to tell you what they're observing? Because they are the closest to, and they'll spot runs that, you know, maybe you mightn't see on the sideline. I think the best person, I think probably one of the best managers of all time, and is Joe Smith, and that looks like his model as such. He never seems to be an autocratic manager. He seems to talk a lot to the players, and you know, any of the feedback that you're even just seeing in the media from Irish rugby players and that is very positive about their input into the result and that. And I think that's just the way to go.
Yeah, no, exactly. That makes sense to me. Penalties, Cheddar, to me, they all seem to be getting scored now, because this time last year they weren't long in, and I remember talking that they weren't an advantage to the penalty taker at all, and we were speculating on the podcast if you'd see a lot more penalties, because the goalkeepers, it looked like they had the advantage. But a year later, a year of practice later, you know, this kind of idea that you have to hit it before the line was really catching them out, and you know, you had really good penalty takers missing, and they looked like they were all over the place. They have their technique down. We're looking at Gillan, we're looking at Horgan, we're looking at Shane Dooley, Jason Ford, TJ Reid. They're all banging them in the league. I think I got a stat, something like 70% have been scored. That's not a definitive figure, but to me it looks like even more than that is being scored. I know James Skehill saved two against Dublin and Offaly, but I don't remember that as many misses this year in the league. They all seem to be rattling the back of the net.
I think, look, when you look at intercounty level now, the level of coaching that goalkeepers get, and the specific coaching, like every county has their own specific goalkeeping coach, and a lot of that would be looking at the penalty taking techniques of the opposition, and the player in the opposition is going to be taking penalties and all of that. So there's a huge amount, you know, goalkeepers, I'd probably say that at the minute there's probably the biggest volume of class goalkeepers that I've seen. So I think it is more to do with that, you know, and let's say last year goalkeepers, you know, they just had a really, really good probably just training and understanding of where the ball
so
was.
So goalkeepers
go.
Had to learn about them as well. Everyone, it was so new to everyone last year. So was goalkeepers had to maybe figure out, do I go before it? Do I guess like a soccer goalkeeper? Do I stand in the middle? But I saw a lot of them being missed last year. It was more to bad strikes because of the line. You know what I mean? The takers weren't at the level.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you on that. And I think what you're right, what threw them a little bit was that, you know, prior to that, they would have been always practiced and lifting it, you know, taking an advantage of a couple of yards and then striking the ball, where obviously you can't do that. And it probably threw a lot of the real stick men. And I think you're probably seeing, you know, a much more truer strike now, and obviously a much more practiced strike. And I mean, some of them are rockets into the top corner. You know, you could put a wall in front of them, they'd probably score it.
And I don't know what your take on it is. I think it's better than the way it was. I think it's aesthetically better. And I think now that the advantage is more with the taker, I think it's a lot fairer. I was complaining last year, what's the point of a penalty if the advantage is not with the attacker? But it looks this year now that it is more with the attacker, and it just looks better, I think.
Yeah, it is. I think it's really exciting as well.
Yeah,
particularly in close games and that. And you know, if the goalkeeper was to say it, I mean, it was to save it. Look, it's such a difficult skill, and it's such bravery. The speed of the ball that they're striking at now is just phenomenal. And even just to stand in front of some of these, I actually remember ourselves a number of years ago, we were actually training and we were practicing penalties, and our penalty taker took a shot, and it just happened to strike our goalkeeper on the forehead, and it just knocked him out. You know, so I think people don't realise the speed of the ball and that. And for a goalkeeper just to stand there and genuinely attempt to save the ball, which most of them do, rather than just getting in the way of it, I think it's phenomenal bravery. But I take your point. I think the striking is better, and I think it's probably practiced more, and I think the precision of the strike and where they want to put the ball is better than it was last year, hence you're seeing more goals.
Yeah, two performances yesterday that stood out. We're going to get the performance of the weekend at the end. Seamus Flanagan was a player I didn't know anything about before yesterday. I don't know about you, but he was sensational, like a target man, full forward, not the cleanest striker in the world maybe, off his bad side, but he looked like a real handful, top class. Jason Ford back to his scoring well, and the discussed on League Sunday last night with Jamie Callanan and these fellas back, Jason Ford can't really be dropped now at this stage. Like, I mean, he's almost, he reminds me of Kevin McManaman in that you have to come of age at some stage and stop being this fella who, you know, gets a start, doesn't perform, comes on, performs. that he looks like he's got the whole package. John McGrath says he's taken his game to a new level. So maybe when you're Shane McAllen, and it might do Tip no harm for this unpredictability that they need, is to have Shane McAllen at centre half forward, at wing forward, where he started his career. It's not like Shane McAllen can't, you know, isn't a versatile player anyway. So, like, again, it's adding to the Tip options.
I suppose Jason is really only fulfilling the potential that a lot of people saw in him in underage up along, and, you know, bear in mind he's shown that in, at Fitzgibbon level as well. And I suppose just playing regularly a Tip at the minute is just working for him as well. He's into a rhythm of playing that. Look, it's just a super forward, and he can hurl it anyway. You know, he can. He's a ball winner. Obviously, a very, very good striker. Can break through on a tackle and that. So he's a lot of things going for him. I think Michael Ryan would be just delighted at the minute. He's a number of players coming back here. Bear in mind, Bubbles has come back there somewhere there as well. But I think he's found, you know, Michael Breen, I think, has improved an awful lot towards where he was maybe last year or the last couple of years. I think Michael Ryan's probably really delighted. And he's probably delighted with the draw for the quarterfinal as well. They're playing Dublin. They're not a Munster team. So he's not playing somebody that he's going to be playing again in a couple of weeks' time. So I think Michael Ryan certainly at the start of the year set out to you know, either to develop newer players or to get some of the established players playing stronger and nailing down a place in the team, and then obviously having huge competitiveness for the team for the Munster Championship. And I think he's probably achieved that, and I'd say he's quite happy with where he is at the minute.
Yeah, I'd actually go so far as to say he's the happiest manager of them all with what the way they finished, with the draw and with the players that he's developed. Like, I mean, when you take all of those into consideration, I'd say he's absolutely delighted with the experiment. And
I'd say that, but I'd be a small little bit concerned though about full back line yesterday. I thought just conceded a little bit too much space. I know Cadogan and some of these players are fantastic stick men and really, really quick players, and difficult once they get one on one on you. It's difficult, and I know Donamara from club hurling, and he's a very, very tidy, very, very tight corner back. But just their full back line just yesterday looked to be in a little bit of trouble, particularly for this time of the year. And you can, you know, just transfer that forward to 5 or 6 weeks' time, quicker ball, quicker ground, and, you know, some quick cork forwards on you. So I'd say he's a little bit concerned about the back, whereas up front he probably has a lot of options at the minute.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Great stuff, Cheddar. We'll be back in a second with Declan Hannan.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
All right, delighted to say Limerick captain Declan Hannan is on the line now after Limerick's brilliant win yesterday and getting out of Division 2, Declan, for the first time. I don't know how many years. I've seen 7, 8 and 9, but it must feel like a lifetime for you fellas.
Yeah, it does. I suppose, even for myself, I've never experienced life in division, in the top division of the hurling. There's a couple, I'd say 5, 6, 7 other lads and the panel as well who are in the same boat. So, you know, there's a lot of disappointment throughout the years trying to get out of that division. But yesterday, I suppose people saw how much it meant to us at the end of the game to finally get promoted to the Division 1A. So it was happy days in Limerick yesterday evening.
Yeah, and even the manner in which you win it, though, Declan, must be really satisfying to come back from 8 points down, 9, I think, at one stage against a team like Galway.
Yeah, I suppose like Galway came out in the first half and really hurled us off the ceiling for 15, 20 minutes. And I suppose we hadn't experienced the intensity or the skill level or the pace that Galway played us in any of our league games up today until yesterday. So I suppose, look, it just took us a bit of time to get up to the pitch of the game. And once we did, and we went in at half time and kind of gathered around and got ourselves back together, and we came out in the second half and kind of imposed ourselves in the game and thankfully came out the right side of the result.
So what was said at half time then for the turnaround?
Yeah, not a whole pile, to be honest. I think even looking back, we had 12 wides in the first half as well. So, you know, if even half of those went over the bar, you know, the scoreline at half time would have been totally different. But I suppose the only small change we made was that in the first half we didn't exactly stick to what we had set out to do, and in the second half we did. So, but there was no panic anyway in the dressing room like that. We said we'd try and give a performance and show it all against this year, and if we did that, then we'd show stuff coming into the game, and it was the same story yesterday.
What way did you not follow what you'd set out to do?
Yeah, I suppose we kind of hit a few aimless balls up towards the forward line, and we just things we've practiced at training, and we just didn't bring them to the game in the first half. I suppose in the second half we did a lot more of kind of passing and shorter passing game, and moving the ball and giving better ball into the forward line, and the boys inside kind of reaped the dividends then.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So who does the talking then at half time? John obviously talks. Do you talk as captain? Who are the talkers in the dressing room?
Yeah, John will obviously have a few words, you know, and Paul Kinnock, and look at it. I mean, whoever wants to has something to say, there's anybody can speak, you know, and there's a lot of leaders in that dressing room, you know, and even a couple of subs came in and had a few words on how things looked from them looking in, you know. So, I mean, there's a big group of lads there, and if someone sees something and thinks they might change, maybe needed it, they'll say it, and we can all have a discussion around it. So, like I said, there's loads of leaders, and a couple of people spoke yesterday, and it kind of got us going and got us back into a proper frame of mind.
Yeah, and is it usually the older fellas that do the talking, or some of these younger fellas? Are they in a place yet where they can actually do a bit of talking?
Well, no, they are, absolutely. I mean, those guys are seriously experienced as well, you know, and maybe not necessarily in the senior ranks, but coming up along in minors and under-21s, and they've won a lot of medals. So, you know, they know how to win, and they bring a confidence like that, and kind of an aura of like not panicking in certain situations. Like yesterday, maybe a Limerick team in years gone by may have, you know, ended up losing that game by 10 points, but I think the good thing for us was that there was no panic, and we got a performance eventually, and we grinded it out.
Yeah, that, I suppose that's important then, with their winning mentality coming in to the dressing room. 2015-17 All-Ireland winners, and that gives that fresh impetus. But like your team, your year won a Munster in 2011, so there's a lot of, and a lot of year lads then would have won the Munster in 2013. So we were just saying at the start of the show with Cheddar, there's a lot of winning medals and winners in that Limerick dressing room.
There are, you know, not necessarily again in the seniors, but, you know, there has been, I suppose, a lot of leaders who've left the panel in the past couple of years through retirement, and it's not easy to replace them, you know. It does take a couple of years for new lads to blend in and try and get the right balance between, I suppose, youth and experience. But yeah, there are a lot of medals from the number 21 guys coming in who've won All-Ireland in 15 and 17, and they bring a great confidence with them, you know.
Yeah.
Which was all the lads kind of feel at, which is great, you know.
Yeah, and like, I mean, some of the older fellas might have been dragged down a little bit by the baggage of Limerick not winning, you know, that kind of thing, whereas the new fellas might drag you guys out of that. It's not like you've been around that long losing, but, you know, Limerick maybe losing All-Ireland finals in the 90s and things, that these fellas are just kind of banishing maybe that from the dressing room.
Yeah, I suppose there is a bit of baggage, you know, but like, you're right. I mean, these lads, they haven't really experienced losing, I suppose, the young lads coming in at the 21. So, like, they're fresh and they're determined, and their attitude is fantastic, you know, and that definitely rubs off the rest of it there. And people bought inside the panel and extend the panel and extend the backroom team, you know. There's a real good morale there at the minute, and that's down to a lot of the under-21s coming in and driving it on.
Was the Division 2 thing starting to weigh you down a bit? Because I remember talking to Shane Dowling, it must have been 4 years ago, he was doing a different show that I was doing, a TV show, and he was kind of like, Division 2 isn't that bad, you know. He said, you don't necessarily have to hit the ground running like the Division 1A teams do. And he made a lot of sense to me in that Division 2 is a cushy kind of place to be in a lot of ways, and you'll get into a quarter final. But I suppose psychologically, being in there for as long as you were in there, it might have started to kind of, I don't know, get inside your heads a bit maybe.
Yeah, it was like, I suppose yesterday's semester was a real sense of relief, I think, that even just to prove to ourselves that we were actually capable of getting out of the division and capable of putting up a performance against the likes of Galway. I think we really, it'll be good for Limerick to be playing games against the likes of Tip Cork, Kilkenny next year in Division 1A, you know. I know there's probably pros and cons, like Galway obviously were in Division 1B last year and won the All-Ireland. It's good in terms of you can blood in a few new players and give them game time, whereas you probably can't do that as much in Division 1A, but yeah. It's definitely better for Limerick to be in 1A and playing more competitive games. against the bigger teams.
Yeah, yeah. I think like you're a little bit like Wexford in their development last year. You need to take that step up now, and you know, and be at that kind of level on a regular basis.
Correct. Yeah. Like I mean, just the standard in 1A is phenomenal. You know, like I mean, the results kind of prove that. That's sort of 1 week you can have a team flying it, and the next week they come up against a strong opposition and they lose. You know, so like I mean, next year is going to be very, very tough for ourselves to stay up there. You know, I don't want to beat them this year, but the standard of teams haven't been what they will be next year. So look, we'll be trying to win a number of games again next year in the league. And look, it kind of tells you a lot of where you are, I suppose, in terms of getting ready for the championship. So again, just kind of pros and cons being in 1A and 1B.
Yeah, was the plan yesterday kind of to lay down a marker physically? Like, I mean, you didn't stand back from Galway, and we know Galway are such a big, physically imposing team. When any flashpoints kind of came, you weren't found wanting there.
Yeah, no, geez, they're a phenomenally strong team, and physically they're very, very strong, you know. But yeah, look, I mean, we kind of spoke about it earlier on in the year, like if teams wanted to take us on physically or through sheer hurling, that we try and give it back to them as best as we could. And look, everyone enjoys a bit of physicality in games as well, you know. And I was delighted yesterday that when anything did happen, that there was Limerick lads in backing each other up, and similar to Galway, you know, there was no one holding back, and it was really kind of a championship feel to the game, you know, towards the second half, towards the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, nobody was asked wanted anyway.
No, definitely not. Come here, talk to us about centre back. Are you enjoying life there? You're a heavy scoring forward. We don't often see heavy scoring forwards going back centre back, but one of the lads was saying on the podcast here last year you played there underage, so it's not new to you.
Yes, not really. I suppose all from underage teams and secondary school and college was kind of playing in the back, so all was up long until kind of coming into the seniors at Limerick. I am enjoying it. You know, it's kind of, I suppose, refreshing one way to move from the forwards back to the backs when you played it when you were young, and it kind of brings back memories of, I suppose, just kind of enjoying games more than putting a bit of pressure on yourself if you're in the forwards. But I mean, there's serious, I suppose, competition for places at the minute. You know, if you're told to go into goals or told to go anywhere, you go there and try and do what's best for the team.
Yeah, no, exactly. And come here, talk to us. I don't know if you watched League Sunday last night, but Michael Deignan pointed you out for not being tight to Cottle Mannion. Myself and Cheddar were talking on the show here in part one about a centre back. We didn't think that was your fault, that if you abandoned the middle or abandoned your full back line, the likes of David Burke and these fellas will be bombing down there. So talk to us a little bit about Mark and Cottle Mannion, and I don't know if you saw League Sunday or not.
No, I didn't see it at all last night, to be honest. Yeah, but yeah, Cottle's a serious player as well, and he tend to roam around. I suppose the majority of forward lines tend to move from position to position, but definitely for the goal, it's probably a fall for the goal, even in Boston around the back early on in the game. But look, I mean, the standard of players are phenomenal here, no matter who you're playing or who you come up against. You just have to try and go out and do the best you can and try and do what's best for the team. And look, we have our own plan in place, and we try and implement this to the best we can. And look, it's good enough for us at the minute.
Is that the art of centre back, though, knowing when to drop off and cover the middle, which, like in any team in football that I've been involved on, managers are obsessed with leaving the middle open. That's what absolutely under no circumstances do they want. But getting that balance between doing that and having to follow someone that's dangerous like Mannion, you know, is that the challenge?
Sure, it is, of course. Like, I mean, a lot of, I suppose, half hour length these days kind of tend to play a lot further out the field, and yeah, I suppose you don't want to leave your full back line too exposed or anything like that. So look, we try and keep a structure that we've kind of been trained to do. And look, sometimes it works, sometimes it won't. Sometimes, like, the opposition will use the ball very well and get it to the players coming further up the field. And like the standard of the teams, it'll vary. You know, if they use the ball well, then you look like a bit of a plonker. But look, we keep doing what we're trying to try and implement our own game plan.
Yeah, no, exactly. So since you started in 2011, you won a Munster in 2013. Then you almost beat Kilkenny in 2014. And like, I mean, it looked like you were on the cusp of things. That team's almost completely gone now, apart from a few of the older lads like yourself.
Yeah, I mean, like as I said, there's a lot of changes in the past couple of years. And then there was new lads coming in and a couple of experienced guys retiring as well, like Gavin O'Mahony and James Ryan and Wayne McNamara and Donald Red. I mean, it's very hard to replace guys like that, even from a psychological point of view, and having them in the dressing room and the experience they bring. It is tough going, you know, to get new people in to replace them, but we're building away the whole time. And look, if we keep going the way we're going and keep concentrating on our own game plan and our own performances, But things will come together. It doesn't happen overnight.
No, exactly. And I suppose when you see that team breaking up that was almost so close, and then you see young fellas coming through in some great underage teams, it's a matter of saying to yourself, just be patient. You know, there's reinforcements coming, I suppose.
Yeah, look, it is about being patient, you know. I mean, there's going to be setbacks every year, but I suppose the last couple of years for Limerick has just been about rebuilding, and the boys came in last year, and the new management team, and got a structure in place, and we were building on it, and probably could have beaten Kilkenny last year in the qualifiers. We didn't. I think at this stage last year we were a lot further back than we are today. You know,
right.
we've improved an awful lot since last year. So look, I mean, it's constantly trying to improve and just get the best out of ourselves, and look, we keep trying to do that anyway.
Talk to us about Paul Kinnerk, in particular. You know, you have a very good management team in place. Talk about his influence and his coaching ability, because he's so highly rated. He's a Limerick man, but you lost him to Clare and you have him back now.
That's right, Chad. You know, he's a fantastic coach. You know, he really thinks about things and thinks about game plans and thinks about different scenarios that may come up from various different teams in all the different matches you play. You know, he's a real thinker and he's fantastic at what he does. You know, he has everybody tuned in and everybody knows their job no matter where you're playing. And that's just what's needed in the game these days. That's, if somebody comes on, they know exactly what they have to do no matter where they are on the field. And you need everybody to be tuned in as well. You know, but Paul's fantastic. He's brought in like massive amount of professionalism as well, and as he's coming, as I said, he went to Clare there when you're doing the All Ireland, so like he's serious experience as well, you know, and in winning. And we're learning like every single night we go training with Paul and the rest of the lads, so yeah, it's all good.
And it was like, I suppose he'd implement a game plan, or John would implement a game plan and he would coach it, or what's the dynamic like there?
Yeah, look, I mean, the backroom team all work very well together, and they all have an input into which way we want to go and how we want to play the game, you know. It's not a case of just one man dictating everything. It's a real player-driven as well, as you know, just things are open for discussion constantly, and which is good, you know. You need to hear from both sides of the table, I suppose, and try to strike a balance of what's the best for the team. And just good communication there as well, like between both players and the management team. So look, we'll just keep going the way we're going at the minute.
We were actually saying at the start of the show as well, myself and Cheddar, that that's so important for managers to get feedback off players, because like tactically there's no one knows their part of the field better than the actual player that plays there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, and often during matches you may spot something and there's no problem in calling over any of the management team and saying what you think of this, or they ask you what do you think of this, you know. But it is massive in terms of the communication between both players and management, because I think if you don't have it, the whole thing will just fall apart. Look, it's vitally important that players, I suppose, have a say in how they want to play the game, because they're going to be the lads going into the field, and if they're not buying into this, it will fall apart, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. So was there any, I'm going to ask you, were there any celebrations, but you texted me last night at 11:55 and your text was perfectly written, so I was taking it that there was no big beer in sessions last night.
No, there wasn't, no. Look, it was more relief, like it wasn't a case of we're going to celebrate now for the night or anything like that, but there was a real sense of content, I suppose, after the game yesterday and the bus journey home. The morale was good. And people were just in good form, you know, but there was all late night and all late celebrating or anything like that. We've obviously again this weekend against Clare, so just getting knuckled down and get ready for that again.
Yeah, and you know that's in the Gaelic grounds. Are you aware of that? That just broke before I came across here to talk to you.
You know, I didn't hear that. I knew they were talking for it today, right, but I didn't hear where
so,
the
fixture
was.
So you obviously won the toss, so you've laid down the marker of winning the toss already. So it's in the Gaelic grounds at 4:00 on Sunday.
Very good. I suppose, yeah, we've met Clare already this year in the Munster League, and I suppose the both teams know each other very well from playing each other the last number of years in both leagues and championships, so it'll be another high intensity game again, but as I said, we concentrate on ourselves and try and implement our game plan and get it going as early as we can in that game.
Cheddar commented at the start of the show there as well about the Limerick support, and they're fanatical in Limerick. Have they started believing in this team, Declan? Can you kind of sense around the county that the supporters are starting to understand that the team is going in the right direction?
Yeah, I suppose like the Limerick supporters are fantastic. I mean, they kind of go through thick and thin like the players, you know. They really wear a hearts on their sleeve, you know. Like through good days, bad days, whatever. But yeah, I think even from yesterday, from talking to a few people and again this morning, they're they're happy the way things are going. And look, we obviously want to support the Limerick people as well, and to get them out watching games and to get behind the team, because it is a young team, you know, and I suppose they need a vocal crowd as well, especially when we form games. You know, that's the Munster Championship, there's going to be two games at home, and you need a good vocal Limerick support. And I think as players, you definitely feel that for that as well. So look, I think they're enthusiastic, but they always are enthusiastic. So look, we just, I suppose, keep performing the way we are and keep them happy, you know. And look, again, they're fanatical and they're excellent. I can't speak highly enough of them, to be honest.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough week for you now, focusing on the hurling with Cheltenham going on.
Sometimes this is the choice. The first focus will be hurling in Clare for the week.
You're a horse racing fanatic.
I wouldn't say fanatic. I'd follow it all right. So I'd be checking the results there and see how it's going for the week. But be concentrating on Clare, I think, more than Cheltenham this week.
Well, I hope you are. You might give us a tip there before we let you go. Limerick to be Clare.
I'm hungry for that. It's like that. No. I don't know. I'd like to see Vaheen run away in the Chapman Hurdle. I suppose he's an each way price anyway. It'd be nice to see him getting back to his old form.
Okay, right. Well, listen, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much, Declan.
I call him Sound.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys. So I brought them down, and so we did. We actually sold them to. I think I had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkey still there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
They call it. Yeah, you see them on the beaches, and so yeah, you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey eat, and a donkey eat a pallet.
All right, performance of the weekend, Cheddar. First one up is Ronan Hayes. He scored 2-4 against Leeds. Not a player I would have known too much about. He's a young enough player. You were at this one in Amore Park. Terrible result for Leeds, but Ronan Hayes, very good.
Yeah, look, not a good result for Leeds. I suppose we're coming into the game looking for a win and looking to get into a league quarter final, and maybe the last two games just really haven't played the potential. Dublin were in the same position, really. They were really looking for a performance first and a result after that. I'd say Pat is very, very happy with that. Some young players were quite impressive. I'd probably say Donald Burke more so than Ronan Hayes, but Ronan Hayes did score, and he's a very, very young player. I stand corrected on this, but I think he actually was only a sub in a county final last year for Kilmacud Crokes, or the jump from being a sub in your club team into a county team, and show an awful lot of potential.
I think he was a sub when he was a minor as well. I was googling him there earlier this morning, and he came on in a minor match, whether it was it was his first or second year minor. But 2-4, and Burke was very good. Yeah, he got four from play, wasn't it?
And I suppose it was interesting yesterday. I was looking at games. I'm really looking at what makes teams tick and that, and I think the idea of pulling out Donald and Danny Sutcliffe out the field and actively looking for ball. Both of them are very athletic players, very, very good first touch players. So I think that Dublin are probably streaming some of the way that they actually play on that, and some of the things that they did yesterday I thought was very, very good. Just back to Ronan Hayes, like, he's a tall, lanky type player, good first touch. I think the other side, Paul Winters, is the same. If you were to look at the four wingmen in the forward line for Dublin, Donald Burke, Danny Sutcliffe, Ronan Hayes and Paul Winters, they're all tall players but very, very athletic, like open space and like creating space, and some of the crossfield balls to the open side yesterday from Dublin was quite impressive at times, but their ability to see that space and make that space, I suppose, is what was good. He obviously has a bright future ahead of him, but I'd probably say that, you know, in the, particularly in the last couple of years, there's been a number of Dublin hurlers like that that have come along very young, showing an awful lot of potential, and then for whatever reason just don't seem to mature into the game breaking players that you expect them to be. So you know, I'd urge a small little bit of caution on Ronan. He was certainly very impressive yesterday, and his quickness out to the ball and gain control of the ball, and that caused an awful lot of difficulties, and obviously his finish for the goals was good. But as I say, you'd probably wait for a couple of serious matches, and none more so than the quarter final now against Tip, before you'd give a real judgment on him.
Yeah, that's a real test. There's no doubt about that, because they were hammered in their qualifier game against Tip last year, which spelt the end of Cunningham. That's interesting that they've got those four mobile fellas with a good touch and nice kind of sprayers of ball, because what jumps out to me is Conal Keeney and Ryan O'Dwyer then, who are kind of the big physical men who are going to be there as ball winners maybe in the middle. So are Dublin getting that blend right finally towards the end of the league game, or do we have to put this in the context of Leash just not showing up on the day at all?
I know, I definitely would put it in the context of that. I think, you know, Pat wouldn't read enough into it anyway. I think he'd been happy with what he saw yesterday, but look, there was some other issues as well. I suppose Dublin had a run on Leash, particularly in the first half, that had a strong wind behind them, but they didn't really put him away, and you know, that sort of I suppose competitiveness or physicality, I suppose, to go for the juggler at that stage, they didn't show that. The other top teams have, but they definitely showed a method of play and a system of play that's going to suit them a little bit. But that in itself, I think there's going to be a couple of issues about that as well. They had obviously Conal centre forward and Ryan O'Dwyer full forward, very competitive, very physical players, with the four men around them. But then you've got to decide what sort of a system of play am I going to play. Am I going to play short hurley passes, or am I going to go long and put the ball to a target man and expect men to be filtering around the space then to pick up the ball? And I think that in itself might be, you know, they might need to refine a little bit and decide on what system.
What were they doing? A mixture of both, or
well, it's probably a little bit of a mixture of both. But you know, I certainly saw in the first half Pat Urge and even the goalkeeper to drive it long. And now there's a strong breeze behind him, so look, it made a lot of sense to put the ball in the least danger area as such. But I just think that the likes of Donald Burke and Danny Sutcliffe and Paul Winters and Ronan Hayes and a lot of other, there's a lot of those type of players in Dublin and have been in the last couple of years. They're very, very quick, very, very good stick men, good understanding of how to make space. And I think that pace, possession, precision type game probably suits them a little bit more than driving it long to the target man and then expect to come on to the breaking ball as such. Because I think in the first one, the forward determines the space and determines where he wants the ball. And the second one, the distribution shot is already taken and you're sort of coming onto that ball, and it can be a little bit confusing for forwards sometimes when you make a run trying to create space and open up space, and then it goes long to a target man and you're not coming around the front or the back of it to map it up.
Yeah, so I suppose maybe having the option of both, but maybe having a more defined style. And you've Mark Shute come back in as well, which is another fast big man, so maybe they have an overabundance of these kind of good big fellas.
That's true. I mean, you've got to consider that, you know, all the cooler contingent have got to come in there yet, and you've got the likes of Liam Rush to come in there as well, although, you know, maybe he's a defender.
He'll be six probably, yeah.
He may very well be, although Chris Crummy's playing well there at the minute. But I actually saw a couple of Dublin club matches earlier on in the year, and there's a couple of other players there that are not too far away from being that competitive type player that has, you know, great mobility around the place, to the likes of Whiteley or even Colin Cronin from Coola. So they have different types of players to fit into the system that they want to play, if that's the way they choose. I think the other interesting thing was they have a very, very tall half back line. Shane Barrett, although he got injured yesterday, Chris Crummy had said both of them are about 6'3" or 6'4", and I'd say, you know, everybody knows about Liam Rush at this stage. And their full back line was very, very tight. The actual best player in the field yesterday, which is unusual to say this, was Owen O'Donnell, the cornerback. Very, very impressive player, very, very physical, direct on the ball, good use of the ball. I thought he was very, very impressive. And you know, when you think of it, like Dublin have a number of defenders come in from Coola into that team as well. So I'd say Pat Gilroy, you know, having you know, haven't had a number of poor results, and you know, was happy enough with yesterday's performance, albeit, you know, you'd have to mark it, you'd really test yourself next weekend against Tipperary is where you'd really test yourself in terms of top quality.
Yeah, okay, so Dublin are still a work in progress. They're playing Orthodox, are they? You mentioned those six forwards are all playing in the forwards, at least anyways.
They do, but 10 and 12 drift back to field a lot. Look, a lot of teams are playing like this at the minute. Donald Burke would have got a lot of ball actually on his own half back line, and of course that creates fierce problems for you on the other side, because, you know, does your wing back follow him down the field and create the space then in front of his corner forward? You can't do that.
Yeah.
So you need to have pre-planned how you're actually going to manage that with your own full forward line coming out, and, you know, dogging out a match for 5 or 10 minutes, you know, doing what they're doing, just taking the strength of their you know, system away from them. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Tip manage that next week. You know, Tip may just go for the juggler and not try to react to it, but there are the things I suppose I'd be looking at in matches.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Richie Leahy is the next one, and like, I didn't see this game live, but I definitely saw the highlights, and his highlights were sensational. Like, I mean, he's just so composed for someone that's so young, and the second point where he just threw it up off the hurl, like, I mean, maybe the game is going back towards the small skillful midfielders. We had the likes of Cha Fitz, who retired from the game because it was going more towards the Michael Fennellys, Michael Rices of the world. I think he commented on that, but it seems definitely that a lot of most teams now have the ball playing midfielder, maybe a converted forward, or a lot like Chris Barrett and Johnny Cohen play for Galway and Tip now, so it's either a converted defender or a converted forward, but somebody maybe who has extra strings to their bow, maybe cheddar than what the natural orthodox midfielders have.
I suppose they're always looking for, and particularly this time of the year, you're always looking at settling your team and what's the best mix, and one of the mixes you'll be always looking at is your midfield. And look, you can go back and look at some classic ones in terms of the Frank Cummins and Chunky O'Brien, and even if you go back to John Fenton, Pat Harton and those, but generally speaking the classic mix is a really, really good striker that can score from distance, and either a very physical player or a very athletic player that can cover ground and link your backs with your forwards. But it's even more important now to have a striker, and a really good striker around the middle of the field, because if you're working the ball out of the defence and you're pinging balls to player and that, particularly if they're playing a sweeper, you need to be able to score from distance. So you need good strikers around the middle. And if you look at it yesterday, Kilkenny had two. James Maher is a wonderful hurler. He got injured last year, got a serious injury last year. Otherwise than that, he'd be already on the Kilkenny team. I think he scored a couple of points yesterday as well. I think there was 5 points from play from midfield for Kilkenny yesterday, which is quite impressive.
Yeah.
But just back to your point, you know and probably going back to Dublin a little bit in this as well, you know, the idea of just striking aimlessly now with your head down, you know, there's very, very few teams will do it. You're always looking at trying to free a player onto the platform of your half back line and then distribute intelligently inside to the forward line, but you also need a player around the middle third to be able to take that 30 yard stick pass and be able to turn and put it over the bar, and he needs to be a good striker and a good accurate striker, and Kilkenny probably have two of them at the minute.
Yeah, because there always seems to be that little bit of space around the midfield. Maybe it's the half back line, you start being put under a lot more pressure, but a lot of the time in midfield there seems to be space for those long range points. And again, like, it was always been my argument about sweepers and defensive systems, and I say they work in football because you can't kick the ball that far. But in hurling, you shouldn't be as successful because, like, you know what I mean? If you can put it over from 65, you can't pack the defence that much inside the 65 as what you could maybe inside the 45 with Gaelic football, for example.
I think that's the real beauty about having strikers in the middle of the field. We were talking earlier on about Donald Burke and Danny Sutcliffe, you know, working back the field and picking up stick passes off their half back line and off their full back line and then turning and work the ball back up the field. I mean, do your wing backs follow them? Well, they can't. Because now you've created the space in the place you really don't want to create space, which is in your own full back line. So if a defence decides to stay back, well, obviously your forwards are outnumbered if you have two wingmen working back to field, and you need to be able to use those wingmen to score from distance to suck out the two halfbacks and,
yeah, keep them honest.
And that's, yeah, exactly, and that's, I suppose, a tactical thing that you're working your way through the game and that.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's very interesting. Anthony Nash was at his brilliant best from a goalkeeping point of view. We talk a lot about his puckouts, and they can be brilliant and set up an awful lot of attacks, but I think teams maybe have figured them out after the end of last year. I think Galway, was it Galway, figured them out Figured them out?
There's probably a couple of teams. I mean, it's all about the movement inside and the decoy runs to create space to be able to put it to space. And like, he is very, very accurate at a long distance of actually sticking it to hand.
Oh, it was Clare this year kind of fell off. Clare this year in the league, we spoke about that the half forward line kind of split in between the lines and they all moved back one and they kind of covered off that space.
To do the hedges. Just,
thank God I thought of that.
Yeah.
So Anthony Nash, it was more a goalkeeping point of view that he was looking really good yesterday. The one save with his foot was unbelievable, and he has that in his armoury.
I know he's a top class keeper. He's not an all star for nothing. Look, he's got everything really in his game. Very, very good shot stopper. And at the end of the day, that's your primary job here. Stop the scores going in. A little bit worrying from Cork, I suppose, that there was so many chances taken against Nash yesterday, and you know, some of them were pretty close to him. But his foot stop, look, if De Gea was to make a save like that, the whole of Europe would be raving about it. So it was a stunning, stunning save. But look, nothing I'd say that Anthony himself wouldn't expect him to do. You know, he is a top class keeper. He expects to make those stops.
You don't often see them with the foot, do you?
No, that's true. And I suppose he was a little bit unbalanced. You know, I say he was expecting, and a lot of the forwards will be placing their shots when they get in that close. They'll be seeing where the goalkeeper is, and they'll try and wrong foot him. And I say Anthony was a little bit wrong footed and had to double back, and that's why he used his foot. But however you keep it out, I suppose that's all that matters.
Yeah, it's an absolutely unbelievable skill, in fairness to them.
Very brave as well. Yeah. When you have some of these players coming down, they hit the ball.
Break your
so
ankle
hard.
There if you stick your foot in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Patrick Curran, I want to get your thoughts on him, because I really like Patrick Curran. He's a proper heavy scorer. I think he's a great foil for a Maurice Shanahan or somebody like that in there. For whatever reason, he can't nail down a starting place for Waterford. He scored 113 yesterday, but he has scored heavily for Waterford before, and then maybe he's on the bench the next day. So I don't know if there's something happened behind the scenes. I think he's very talented, but I'm not a hurling person, as I keep saying in this podcast. What's your take on Curran, or do you think he should be a starter, or maybe Derek McGrath knows more, obviously does know more about it?
Well, definitely the last part, Wooly. You know, you go on what you see in training and internal training games and that. And I'd say there's, you know, probably one other little aspect to it as well. You know, Waterford play to a particular system.
Yeah.
And, you know, with another team, Patrick Curran, you know, could be a star. But that system has served Waterford very, very well over the last couple of years. And you know, as a management team, you'd be loath to change it when you have had, you know, a lot of success. Getting into an All-Ireland last year was really, really good. Patrick Curran is a stunning player, has been at an underage on the way up. And, you know, sometimes we've seen over the years, even if you look at the likes of Bubbles, even if you look at the likes of TJ Reid, took a number of years for him to really mature into the way of playing and to establish himself on the team. And look, I've no doubt that Patrick Curran will do that. He's just got all of the attributes needed for a class forward, and it's certain his scoring stands out. So I think, you know, it may take him a little while just to mature and to fit into the way the team plays.
Yeah,
he
might not have that physicality, or might not have that movement that the likes of Jake Dillon or Shane Bennett would have, that constantly kind of buzzing all over. He's more of a finisher maybe, and there's not a place for the finisher with Waterford with the system that you're playing.
There's a little bit of that in it, I would think. But I think also that, you know, the physicality will come for him. He's never going to be, you know, a real aggressive player. But, you know, I'd say if you look at his tackle count, maybe that could be a little bit higher. His shutting down a play and that maybe might be a little bit higher. And, you know, I think when players like that look at specific aspects of their game and they improve on it, then they put themselves in the shop window to nail a place on the team.
Yeah, exactly. Jason Ford, we spoke a little bit about him with Brendan at the start of the show, and Seamus Flanagan as well. They're both in for performance of the weekend. Seamus Flanagan, obviously brilliant, 5 points from play for Limerick yesterday. So we're going to give the performance.
Just before you go off of that one, Willie, next weekend is going to be an interesting one for Jason Ford, because Bill O'Carroll plays full back for Dublin, and Bill doesn't believe in letting you an awful lot of space around anywhere. You know, so I think Jason might have his hands full. Bill may not play very well, but he'll certainly, you know, his method of play is wrapping you up and just not giving you space to play on that.
Illegally wrapping you up.
Well, if I was the manager on the other side, I'd be definitely bringing the referee's attention to it fairly often, and certainly prior to the game. So you know, I'd say when it comes to summer hurling and that, you know, that could be interesting then, particularly when teams move your full back line around the place. I mean, Paddy Smith and Owen O'Donnell played very, very well as cornerbacks. So did Bill, played very, very well yesterday. But when, you know, teams play with a little bit more movement, I suppose, in their forwards, and the ball is coming into them quicker and that. You know, I think that'll be a different test of Bill, but it'll be an interesting one to look at, you know, next weekend with himself and Jason Ford.
Yeah, well, if you want movement and good ball into the forwards, Tipperary are your team to go to. We'll give performance the weekend to Richie Leahy, just a new kid on the block. So much been heard of him in Kilkenny, and I think that's the game. He's found a position that suits him, and he just looks to be at his ease, and there's nothing better than another superstar coming out of Kilkenny, because they just have it, and definitely Richie Leahy has it. So that's performance for the weekend. Right, we'll leave it there, Cheddar. We'll be back on Thursday, and we'll have a look ahead to the quarterfinals next weekend, so there's some great games coming up then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, cause I won't see you later.